It's here and now. This week, the Supreme Court is going to hear arguments in several cases, including one that could have implications for the separation of church and state, and another that has to do with the Chemical Weapons Convention. Emily Bazelon is legal affairs editor for Slate. She also teaches at the Yale Law School, and she joins us now from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Emily, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's get to some of the cases that are before the Supreme Court in a moment. First, I want to ask you about what happened today and this emergency application that has been filed with the Supreme Court involving the Texas abortion case. Tell us what happened.
Planned Parenthood and other groups that provide abortion have asked the Supreme Court for an emergency order that would stop Texas's abortion law, a new law, from going into effect. This is the part of the law that requires abortion providers to get admitting privileges at a local hospital. And the Fifth Circuit, which is the Court of Appeals that has sway in Texas, ruled on Friday that this part of the law could go into effect. The abortion providers say that it will cause at least a third of the Texas abortion clinics to close. And so there is a big problem of access for women. And that is why they're asking the Supreme Court to step in quickly.
But would the Supreme Court in a case like this do that? Is it likely that they will step in quickly?
You know, they could. It's a good question. The Supreme Court tends to stay away from these hot button cases in a quick way. On the other hand, there's a lot at stake here, and there is starting to be what's a split in the lower courts about these laws requiring hospital admitting privileges for abortion providers. So there's certainly a live controversy here. I think the question will be whether the Supreme Court wants to take a look at this in a kind of fast-paced way, because enough justices are concerned about the effect the Texas abortion law would have, or whether they will take a step back, wait for a more permanent ruling from the Fifth Circuit.
Well, we'll have to see what happens with that. But let's get to the cases that are scheduled to be heard by the court this week, starting with one that has to do with the Chemical Weapons Convention. It involves a woman named Carol Bond. Tell us, first of all, about her and what she did.
Yeah, these are unusually interesting facts for a Supreme Court case. Carol Bond had a good friend who became pregnant with a baby that was fathered by Carol Bond's husband. And so Bond was angry with her friend. And Bond was a microbiologist with access to some toxic chemicals. And she smeared them on the door handles of her friend's car and then also on her friend's mailbox. And so the crime that is at issue here is Bond violating the law that Congress passed in order to prevent the domestic use of chemical weapons.
Right. The reason people are paying attention to this is not because of what she did, really. It's whether the Chemical Weapons Convention of 1997 and the Chemical Weapons Convention Implementation Act of 1998 can be used in a local case, right?
Exactly. So this is run-of-the-mill criminal behavior. You would think a state law against harassment or assault and battery could cover this. In this case, though, the state cops weren't interested in this crime. They didn't take any action. And so the victim here turned to the Postal Service because her mailbox was involved. That's how Bond was caught. And then she was prosecuted under this statute that Congress passed that carries very heavy penalties. Carol Bond ended up going to prison for 6 years. And the question is whether Congress can pass a law implementing a treaty simply because it has passed the treaty without invoking any other of Congress's lawmaking powers.
And as Richard Wolf writes in USA Today, the implications of this case could affect the federal government's power on a whole range of issues, from gun control to health care.
It could, if the Supreme Court really said that Congress has no power to make laws when it enacts treaties. However, there's a kind of legal artificiality to this case, which is that Congress does have lots of lawmaking power. For example, the Commerce Clause is the main one we talk about, right? Whenever commerce passes between the states,
right,
different states, Congress can step in. And so it's pretty clear that Congress does have the power to regulate chemical weapons if they travel from state to state. And so in some sense, this case is sort of framed in this limited way that makes it seem perhaps more important than it really is.
And Emily, given what you know about this court, how do you think they might rule on this?
I really cannot imagine they're going to say that Congress has no power to regulate chemical weapons domestically. That just seems like a very strange result, given how much Congress already passes criminal laws. They may, however, say that Congress has to invoke something like the Commerce Clause power as opposed to simply relying on its treaty power.
Okay, let's turn to another case that the court is going to hear on Wednesday. This one involves the town of Greece, New York, and the separation of church and state. Tell us about the facts of this case.
Well, there are a couple of women who live in the town of Greece, New York, and they had been going to town board meetings to speak up on various local issues. And when they arrived, they were surprised to find that the town had a new practice of starting every meeting with a prayer. One of the women was Jewish and one was an atheist, and they both felt like they didn't want to pray. It was a Christian prayer on the nights that they were attending, and they argue that they're being coerced and that this is a violation of their constitutional rights because it's coercing a kind of religious observance.
But the Supreme Court did rule in 1983 that prayer is part of the nation's fabric and not a violation of the First Amendment. Does this particular case fall under that ruling, or is it different?
It certainly could fall under that ruling. There are two questions here. One is whether this town, by almost always having Christian prayers, was essentially promoting Christianity in a way that's unconstitutional. That was what the appeals court ruled. The second question is whether the setting of a town board meeting is different from appearing in front of a state legislature. Because at a town board meeting, lots of people come to actually speak up. And so they might feel that if they didn't pray, then they wouldn't get the same kind of hearing from their town representatives.
And I saw that the Obama administration filed a brief in this case, sort of taking a middle ground.
Yeah, they're basically weighing in on the side of the town of Greece, and they're saying that the courts shouldn't meddle in the kinds of prayers that towns offer. Essentially, it's a position against the ruling of the appeals court that there was a problem here with promoting Christianity.
Would there be implications if the court rules in favor of the town for church and state separation around the country?
Yes, there certainly would. The town of Greece is not the only town that opens with a prayer. And I think we've become accustomed to that in our national life because of this 30-year-old Supreme Court ruling. Essentially, invoking some appeal to God in a public meeting is like grandfathered in as an exception to the separation between church and state. And so if the Supreme Court said that local towns couldn't do this anymore or went further and, overturned its 30-year ruling, that would be a real change.
And it'll be interesting to watch that because, of course, the Supreme Court asks for God's protection before every public session, right?
Right. I mean, this is sort of like In God We Trust on the nation's currency. We've kind of grandfathered in an exception to the usual separation between church and state. And for most people, I think this is not a particularly big deal. However, there are people who don't believe in God or think a particular form of God is being invoked who think that this is coercive or inappropriate or just a violation of the normal barrier between church and state. The court has never really sided with that view in this kind of case before, and I would be amazed if they took that position now.
Emily Bazelon is legal affairs editor at Slate. Emily, thanks as always.
Thanks so much.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Olin College of Engineering, working to educate the next generation of engineering innovators to solve the world's complex technical challenges. Olin.edu. And Nuance, with Dragon speech recognition software for business professionals to create documents, emails, and manage schedules by speaking. Nuance.com.